Today's sharing the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Ayin Gimel. We can continue to learn for our holy forces in Eretz Yisrael, always for Chayalei Tzal. And when I say Chayalei Tzal, I obviously also mean all the Kochos HaBitochon. To me, it's like saying the United States Army. That includes the Air Force, the Marines, all of the wonderful, wonderful people that are defending Eretz Yisrael at every place. All of Tzal and Kochos Bitochon together, I call them Tzal. All of our Chayalim who are fighting this terrible, terrible battle against these Rishoyim. May they be saved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may be protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let the Shvuyim, those captives, be safe. Let them come home fast and soon, healthy, and Nechama to all of the families that have been suffering losses, and Mi'etz Hashem, may everybody in Eretz Yisrael be safe. So we pick up 12 lines from the top, Ayin Gimel Omid Aleph, and we pick up with a quote from yesterday in the Braisa, where we said, Echad Ger, the Echad Eved Meshuchrar, V'cholo Mutar Mekohenes. We said, as opposed to a Kohen who's very restricted in who he's allowed to marry, a Ger Eved Meshuchrar, who are members of Klai Yisrael, and a Chol is also a member of Klai Yisrael, although all of these have some sort of an aspect of Pagam and their lineage, they're all permitted, Mutar Mikohenes. The restrictions that a male Kohen has don't apply to a female Kohen, a Bas Kohen, and she's allowed to marry them, L'chadchila, there isn't a problem. And this is in accord, Masai Lila Rab, this Brisa is in accord with what Rav said. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, or Yehuda said the name of Rav, Lo Husaru Kisheros Linsot Nilinase Lipsulim. The Bas Kohanim don't have the same restrictions, just like we find there is no inyan of Tumah restriction in regards to a Bas Kohen. A Bas Kohen is allowed to go to a funeral. A Bas Kohen is allowed to go and become L'chatchila Metame L'tumas Meis, as opposed to a Kohen, who of course has a prohibition against becoming Tame L'tumas Meis. Kohanim have other restrictions that the Bas Kohanim do not have. So too over here, in terms of their marriage potential, so a Kohen is more restricted than a Bas Kohen. Now, Dorash Rav Zera b'Mechuza, Rav Zera was giving a shir in Mechuza. Mechuza was one of the cities in Bavel, of course. Ger mutor b'mamzeres. And he had said, like the opinion of Rav Yossi that we brought down the other day, that a ger is permitted to go and marry a mamzeres because the kahal of gerim, according to Rav Yossi, is not considered a kahal. He had the whole discussion of the five times it says the word kahal, and Rav Yossi darshan that that doesn't include gerim, and therefore gerim are not considered kahal, and therefore a mamzeres is not a problem of lo yovo b'kahal. A mamzer or mamzeres is allowed to go and marry a ger. Now, he was stoned. Rogmuhu kulhiyama b'es rogayu. They threw their esrogim at him. We find in other places in the Gemara that the person, the Kohen Gadol, if he was a closet stuki and he didn't pour the nisa chamayim on the mizbeach, but he poured it on the side. So one time that happened, then they all threw their esrogim at him. So they likewise they threw their esrogim at Rav Zera. The righteous people used to carry their esrogim around with them all day long, and they were very upset that he darshaned that the geirim were from the kahal. Now that's because Rashi points out shayushom geirim harde, that city of Mechuzah had many converts in it. The hukshalahem, and it was very difficult to them to hear that they weren't considered kahal, that they were separate from the kahal. So therefore, they were upset with this drasha, and they threw their esrogim at Rabbi Zera. Along comes Rava Amar Rava, Mi'iko de Dorish Milsa, Kihai, Beduchto de Shriche Giori. It is very difficult. Who is going to have the ability to go and teach this din properly to these people when they are insulted? They are gerim. There are a lot of gerim there. In a place where there's a lot of gerim, you have to teach them still the halachas. So how can you do this in a sensitive way? So Rava figured out the following very sensitive way to teach the people these halachas. Dorish Rava Mechuzah. So therefore, Rava, when he taught the same din as Rav Zera did in Mechuzah, he taught it in the following way. He didn't change the din around, but he taught it in the following way that made it much more, palatable to the people that were gerim in Mechuzah. And he first taught them a din that was very positive for gerim. He said, ger mutar b'kohenes. That din that we just said, that a bas kohen has no restrictions on marrying a ger. So he told the people there, oh, you're all permitted if you wish to go and marry a bas kohen, to marry a kohenes. And they were very, very happy with that, because now they're, so to say, being fully incorporated into Klal Yisrael, so to anuhu b'shiroi. So therefore, instead of throwing a srogim at him, they gave him lots of fancy fine silk. So it was a very nice thing that he taught, and they were very appreciative of it. But then he taught them the din. He didn't change any din around. He just taught them a very positive din about gerim, that they can marry a bas kohen. And then had the darish lehu gerim mutu b'mamzeres. Then he taught them the din of Rav Yossi, that they also are allowed to go and marry a mamzeres because they technically are not kahal, and therefore the issue of a mamzer or mamzeres lo yovo b'kahal doesn't apply to them. So Armulei, they now were upset, and they told him, "Avsidito l'kamaisa, that nice thing that you told us, so now you've lost it, so to say, by teaching us this thing." So he told him, "No, Amalhu, d'tova l'chu adilhu. In each case, I'm doing you a big favor. Iboy mehocha nosiv, iboy mehocha nosiv. I'm giving you lots of options. I'm opening up your pool of potential suitors, so you can go and marry both a bas kohen, or you could go marry a mamzeres. You have more options to go get married." So he taught this in this very, very interesting way. So therefore, he was able to teach them the din about that they're not, according to Rav Yossi, considered kahal, kal gerim, lo ikre kal, and yet he was able to teach them this din, and therefore they would know what the halach is, because he taught it to them in a way that he also said, you're muter b'kohenes. Gemara paskins and says, v'hilchasa, what's the halacha? Ger muter b'kohenes. Both of these dinim that we just said, the end of the brisa, which was Messiah Lelurab, that the fact is that lo uzuru kisheros linosi lipsulim, that the bas kohen is permitted to go marry the ger, the evinu shuchra, or the cholol. So he taught them that din, and that din is halacha lemaisa. The Gemara says, Hilchasa ger muto bikohenes, and as well umuto bimamzeres, that kahal gerim lo ikre kal. So muto bikohenes, because lo huzaru ksheros linosi lipsulim, umuto bimamzeres kirab yosi, like we said, that kahal gerim lo ikre kal. Okay, now we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Eluhein shtuki. We said the definition of the shtuki was kol shemakir. He knows his mother, but he doesn't know who his father is. Kol shemakir imo, but when the boy or girl goes and says daddy to somebody, the mother says, shush, that's not your father. So therefore, that's called shtuki. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, Dvar Torah, shtuki kosher. Min ha-Torah, mid ha-Raisa, one is permitted to, in fact, go and marry a shtuki. Why? What's the svara to say that it's permissible mid ha-Raisa, and it's only a din derabanan that we don't allow a regular lineage person to go marry a shtuki? Because the reasoning is as follows. My taima, rov kisherim etzla. This woman, who we know is the mother of this child, but we don't know who the father is, so the vast majority of people in the world, she's obviously pnuyo, we know her, she's not a married woman, so there isn't the question of mamzeris through adultery over here, she's a pnuyo, so no matter who she has relations with, unless it's one of the arayas, meaning one of her close relatives, or it would be a mamzer, so the vast majority of the people wouldn't create a mamzer if they had a baby with her. So therefore, the vast majority of the shtuki would not be a mamzer. Rov ksher mitzlah, and only umiyot psulim mitzlah, only a small number of people are possible to her, as Rashi says, kigon mamzer mukrovim. So her father, if she had relations with her father, this child, the shtuki's father is her father, so that would be a mamzer, or if she had relations with a mamzer. But the vast majority of other men in the world would not create a mamzer if she had a relationship with them. Again, it's also for her to have relations with somebody outside of marriage. We're not saying that it's mutter, but we're saying that it wouldn't create a mamzer. So if the vast majority of people are, in fact, not going to create a mamzer if she had relations with them, and therefore, the ozli inhu ligava, and if she went and had relations with a man, and that man came to her. So then we apply the famous principle, which we discussed many times, called the parish, meruba parish. So this person who came to her house and had relations with her in her house, so he is separating himself from the rove of the people, and therefore, when anybody separates himself from the rove, we have the right to say he is from the rove, and therefore, the likely status is that he is a person that is not going to create a mamzer, sheir mitzvah, and only a small minority, umiyu psula mitzvah, and therefore, we have the right to say it follows the majority, and therefore, we would have the halachic right to say you follow the rove in this situation, and therefore the child is not going to be a mamzer. Are you going to tell me he didn't come to her house, she went to his house, and then we'd have to apply a different principle? We then apply the principle of kol kavua kemechza umechza dami. So that's what you're going to tell me, Dilma ozlo ihi ligabayu, that she went to his house, and therefore he is in a set place, he's kavua, and habile kavua, and therefore, even though 99% of the people in the world are kashit to her in terms of that they won't make the child the moms, if she were to marry that person, it would be a perfectly valid marriage, and only a very small percentage, her immediate relatives, and as well the mamzerim of the world. So only they would make the child into a mamzer. So therefore, one would argue, follow the majority. No, we have this principle of Havalai Kavua, Havakol Kavua, Kemechsal Mechsadami. No, we view this as 50-50 in Halacha. So therefore, if she were to go to him, then you're going to tell me that's why it's a Mamzer Daraisa, Vator Omer Loyovo Mamzer, Bekal Hashem. So that's the answer. The Gemara says, no, Mamzer Vadehu de Loyovo. It's only a Mamzer who is a Vade Mamzer that is forbidden to go into the Kal of Hashem, Minatora. Ha Mamzer Sofek Yovo. But a person who is only a Sofek Mamzer, Minatora, is allowed to come into the Kahal. It's only Vadei Mamzer that's not allowed. And therefore, Bikal Vadei Hudlo Yavo, or Bikal Sofik Yavo. So, Midaraisa, Mimanashach, either he came to her house and had relations there, and that produced this child, and then we apply the principle of Kol Deparish, Midaruba Parish, or even if she went to his house, and we have the principle of Kol Kavua, Kemetza Mechzadami, but nevertheless, it's still a Sofik, and only a Vadei Mamzer is also allowed to call. So therefore, Rava tells us that Midaraisa, one would be allowed to marry a shtuki. So then why Midir Rabbanan do the rabbis say that you're not allowed to marry a shtuki? So Rava first gives a reason that will ultimately be rejected, and then we give a different reason. So the first reason that we give is Umatam Amru Shtuki Pasu. So why did the rabbis make this prohibition against marrying a regular yichustiki person to go and marry a shtuki? So Umatam Amru Shtuki Pasu, because Gezeira, there is a concern over here. The rabbis made a Gezeira, Shema Yiso Achoso Me'ovid. Here we have to be concerned that this person that's born, let's say it's a boy that's born, the shtuki is a boy, he's going to end up marrying somebody that will actually be his sister from his father, since we don't know who the father is. So maybe when he now goes and marries a girl, so even though we know who that girl's father is, maybe that girl's father is the father of the shtuki as well. And therefore, Shema Yisa Achoso Me'abim. So this is a rabbinical gezeira to prevent this from happening. Morris says, wait a second, if that's true, then Elo Me'ata Shtuki, Shtukis Lo Yisa, then a Shtuki shouldn't be allowed to marry a Shtukis, because again, maybe it's the same father that they both have. So Morris says, what? Call Kihani Mezanu V'Ozli? What, every single person in the world comes from this one guy? All the Shtukis in the world, this one guy's a profligate lover over here. He went and had relations with every single woman, every Shtuki that's created, he's the father of them? So that's unlikely. So Morris says, so then at least, Bash Shtukis Lo Yisa. But then, he still shouldn't be allowed to go marry the daughter of a Shtukis, because Shema Yisa Chosu Me'Yavi, because then maybe this guy is now married was actually his father as well. So Ella, what do we say? That's not a problem, lo shlicha, because that's very highly unlikely to occur. So tovia hochanami lo shlicha. So then, Rashi says, we make gezeros only on the davar shliach. For the rabbis to make a takana, that in fact, gezero shema yisach hosem yaviv is an extremely unlikely situation. It's not a davar shliach. That's Rashi's preferred pshat, ze ikar. And he says, lo shlicha, umilsa de lo shlicha, lo gazru ba rabbanan. So therefore, can't be the reason. Rava's statement that it's a gzera, shema yisa, chosem yaviv, really is highly unlikely, and therefore that can't be the reason that the rabbis made a gzera, that a regular yichustika person is not allowed to marry a shtuki. So what's the reason? So the Gemara says, ella ma'ala asu biyuchsin. This was a very high additional standard that they set in regards to yuchsin, that they don't want to take any chances. So not that it's highly likely that he's going to marry his sister, but we want to keep lineages as pure as possible. The shtuki has the potential for an impure lineage, and therefore it's a maila. It's an additional standard, a high standard that the Chazal set up in regards to yuchsin, not to allow a regular person, a regular yichustik, a person to go marry a shtuki. Rava now tells us another din. Yomai Rava, Devar Torah, Asufi Kosher. Likewise, this foundling, this child that we don't know who the mother or the father is, should technically be permitted to go and marry, albeit the rabbis came along and said, no, you can't. So what's the reason why Midaraisa, the Asufi, would be allowed to marry into the Kahal? So my time, because Eishes Ish, Bibala Tola, because we have the right to assume that Rov Bilos Achar Habal. And therefore, even if the woman committed adultery, likelihood is that the majority of her relations are with her husband. So therefore, the majority likelihood is that a child will be from her husband and not from the boel, not from the person that she committed adultery with. So, my ikah, what are you going to tell me that miut arusos umiut shohalach balein ladina sayam? Going to tell me, no, that there is a percentage, however, of these arusos and a percentage of women whose husbands went off to Midin Sayam. The arusa never had relations with the husband, and the woman whose husband went off to Midin Sayam didn't have relations with them, and therefore you can't say that Rov Bilos Achar Baal, there are no Bilos over here, and therefore if she's pregnant, so then you have to be concerned this Asufi came from such a relationship. So Kivon the Ika Penuya, however, since the majority of the women are Penuyos, the Ika Nami the Machmas Riovam, and there also are many women who are Nebuch impoverished in times of famine, and they have to give up their children, not because they're not legitimate children, but Nebuch, they can't afford to take care of them. So they put them out by the orphanage because Nebuch, they can't afford them, and they're hoping that somebody will have mercy on their children and take care of them. They have no food for them. So therefore, having palgo palgo, there's at least a 50-50 chance, so to say, that this Asufi is kosher, or this Asufi is a mamzer, so we don't know. However, but again, the same principle we said before, that even if you want to say that there's a 50-50 chance over here, palgo palgo, it's not lav davka 50-50, but even if you want to say that there's a chance that the child is kosher, the chance that the child is pasul, the child's a mamzer, nevertheless, it's not a vaday mamzer. And therefore, bekal vaday hu delo yavo, ha bekal sofik yavo. So again, technically, midaraisa, the asufi should be permissible because there's a chance that he's permissible, there's a chance that he's a mamzer. So therefore, only a vaday mamzer can't come into the kal of Hashem, but this sofik person, this sofik mamzer, this asufi, could. So therefore, why umatam amru asufi pasul? So why did the rabbi say that asufi is pasul? Because shema yisa achoso may ovid. The same exact discussion that we had a minute ago, we'll have by the Asufi, just like we had by the Shtuki. So again, the rabbi's made Xer over here. Maybe he's going to marry Achosomi of. He's going to marry his sister from his father, which would be a capital crime, which would be an Isser of Kares. Gemara says, Elamayata Asufi, Asufis lo Yisus. So again, same question we had before. So then, no Asufi should even be able to marry an Asufis, because again, Shema Yisachoso Bein Me'aviv Bein Me'imo. Here, there's even a bigger chance it could be his mother's sister, which would also be an Isser, or his father's sister. So Gemara says, again, Kol Hani Shadev Yazli. Are we assuming that there's one guy over here that's constantly having relations with these women and having them have children out of a legitimate marriage? So Gemara says, well, at least Bas Asufi lo Yisro, but don't let him marry the daughter of an Asufi again, because Shema Yisro Achoso. Here, one of them is a legitimate marriage and the other one is not. So again, why don't we prohibit that? Ella lo Shchiach, because again, it's unlikely for that to have happened. So hachanami lo shchiach. So therefore, the bottom line is this can't be the reason, because it's just something that's unlikely, and the rabbis wouldn't make a gzerish amayisach also meyavim for a davar lo shchiach. So then, what's the reason? So like we said before, elamala also beyursin. Just like we said by the shtuki, there's a higher level of stringency over here in who we allow people to marry of yichas. So too with the asufi, the same discussion applies. There's a higher level that we hold them to, and even though midoraisa technically could marry a shtuki or an asufi, the rabbis came along and said, no, we're not going to allow those types of marriages. Gemara continues and says, Amar Rava bar Rav Huna, Rava, who is the son of Rav Huna, said, Mitzo Mohu. If you find a child that is Mohu, so this asufi that you find in the streets, this foundling that's found by the orphanage or by the hospital, by the shul, and you see that the baby had a bris milah, so we turn to Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. This is going to induce a whole number of physical circumstances that show that the parents loved this child, cared for this child, and only gave up the child probably because they were impoverished and couldn't afford to take care of this child, and were hoping that a kind person or a kind community would take this child in. But not because this child was illegitimate and the mother's giving up the child because she's embarrassed to have the child. So if you find the child had a bris milah, ein bo mishum asufi. That almost demonstrates, as the top Rashi tells us, the ilav de kashu, if it wasn't for the fact that this was a kosher child, lo yotar chabei lemim halei, they wouldn't have gone to the trouble of going and doing a bris milah on an illegitimate child. They would have said, okay, we want to get rid of him, so put him out there. They wouldn't do a bris milah. The fact that the parents did a bris milah on this child, so that demonstrates that the child was not a psul. And the only reason that the child's been abandoned, the only reason the child is now a foundling, is with the parents Nebuch were impoverished, and they weren't able to take care of this child, and that's why they put the child out, but not because the child was a psul. Likewise, Mishalte Hadome, Rashi explains that this means Evarov Misukonim Umiyusharim. The child is nicely laid out. The child is, his limbs are all straightened out. The child, sometimes when he's born, so the limbs aren't fully straightened. They could be like dislocated joints, or the child just not in good condition. So here you see that the child is straightened out. The child is nicely taken care of. So that also demonstrates that the parents loved this child, and it wasn't an illegitimate child. And therefore, ein bo mishum asufi. If you find the child in this fashion, mishalte hadame, so then it's also considered not to be an asufi. The parents have demonstrated that they love this child, and the only reason mistama that they're giving up the child is because they have no ability to take care of this child. Likewise, shoyev mishlo. If you see the child had oil smoothed out all over his body, so then, or umelo kuchla. Rashi explains umelo kuchla Svivos Einov Liafuso, that they beautify the child either with the oil or with this eye makeup of some sorts, or Rame Chumre. Rashi explains, Kisharim Shaosim Lerefua, the Tolan Latino. So they did some sort of process and a procedure on this child with some sort of knots that are for refuah. As Gemara Shabbos tells us, Habanim Yotzim Biksharim, they can go out with these knots that are tied around them. They used to put various types of spices or herbs in these knots to, again, safeguard the child, to beautify the child. Or Tole Piska, they would go and put, Rashi says, Kameya Shoksab, some sort of a written amulet around the child's neck on a chain to protect the child. Or Tole Kameya, a Kameya is similar to this amulet that was a written amulet, but here they were putting in various types of ikarin, of spices, herbs, to go and protect the child. So all of these demonstrate that the parents love the child, cared for the child, but just physically don't have the ability to support this child. Nebuch, they're so impoverished, and therefore, ein bo mishum asufi, the child is not considered illegitimate in this situation. Clearly, the parents demonstrated their love for the child by doing all these things. It was illegitimate. They wanted to get rid of the child. They wanted the child to die and be out of their lives, so they wouldn't have done any of these things. Likewise, Tole bedikle, if they put the child up in a basket, so was it in harm's way or was it not in harm's way? Im watcho lechaya, if this child could be reached by a wild animal, so then clearly they didn't care about this child and they were hoping the wild animal would come and get rid of their problem. A normal human being can't go kill a child. Only vicious chayas can go kill a child, whether they're human chayas or whether they're animal chayas. Only a vicious chaya can go kill a child. So if the parents put this child within reach of Mocho Lechaya, that an animal will come and kill this baby, Nebuch. So, Yeshbo Mishum Asufi. So then, you have to be concerned that this was an illegitimate child, and that's why they wanted to get rid of it. However, if they placed the child in a basket that the animals couldn't reach in Lot, so then they demonstrated that they wanted this child to survive, and they're hoping that somebody will take care of it. So, Einbo Mishum Asufi. Then we don't have to be concerned about the status of this child being an Asufi. Likewise, Zardisor Smichol Mosa, if they place this child in some sort of a basket near a Zardisor tree, Rashi explains, Itoli Be'ilon Shishmo Zardisor, certain type of a tree. So, if this tree is Ismicha Lemasa, if it's near the city, so Afagab Delo Macho Lechai, even though a wild animal can't reach it on this tree, it was hung up high enough that the animals wouldn't be able to reach it. Nevertheless, there is a concern if you put it on this Zardisa tree, Yeshbo Mishumasuvi, that the parents didn't want this child to live, they couldn't kill it themselves, but they wanted an animal to go and kill it, or in this situation, they wanted the Shadim to come, because Gemara in Ivory Pesachim tells us that the Zardusa, this Smicha Lamasa, this Zardusa tree that is near the city, Lo Pechisa Mishisin Shade, that the Shadim go and congregate over there, and therefore the Shadim would go kill this baby, and therefore they would accomplish their goal of not having this illegitimate child in the world. So therefore, if they place the child on this Zardusa tree that's close to the city where the Shadim are, so it's like the Chayirah can reach it, Yeshua Mishum Asufi. However, Yom La, if it wasn't placed in a way where the tree was near the city and there would be lots of shadim over there, so then Imlav, Aimbo Mishumasufi, then they're protecting the child by hanging it in the basket where the chayus can't reach it, and therefore it is not considered a sufi. Likewise, if they place the child Bei Kinishto Sumichto Limasa Ushriche Bei Rabim, if they place the child in the shul, on the footsteps of the shul, on the doorway of the shul, where there are a lot of people that are present. Now, their shuls were outside. One of the reasons why we say Baruch Hashem Liolam Amen V'Yomein in the Shmoneh Esrei at night, for those that do say it, so that's because their shuls were outside of town. And there are 18 askaros, and there's really an additional time it says Elkeinu, so there's 19 askaros in that tefillah, because that would be used instead of the Shmoneh Esrei. So the people would go and say Baruch Hashem Liolam Amen V'Yomein, who came late, and they would therefore conclude that at the same time that the regular people finished the Shemoneh Esrei, and therefore they could all leave the shul at the same time because it was dangerous to come home alone at night. And therefore, that's why Chazal added that tefillah. That's why some say it still, and some don't say it because they say that it doesn't apply nowadays. In any event, if the shul, which was near the town, outside of the town, where there were a lot of people traveling over there, and they put the baby in such a shul, so then Ein Bo Mishum Asufi, they clearly are hoping that that baby will be found, and that they love the baby. It's a legitimate baby. They just can't afford to take care of that baby. Be a mob. But if they put it in a place where there aren't a lot of people around, so then Yeshua Mishum Asufi, then you obviously have to be concerned that they were hoping that this baby would get killed, Rachmona Litzlan, and therefore they have to be concerned that this is an illegitimate child. Furthermore, Amar Amemar tells us, Hai Pera de Sufli. Pera de Sufli, Rashi tells us that if you find this baby, Nimtso Bechafira, in some sort of a ditch, Hasuya Lahatushom Garine Tumarim, where they would normally place the seeds of the dates, Lemaicho Behemos, for the Behemos to go and eat. So this was like a trough for the Behemos, but they put the baby in such a ditch. So then, Yesh bo mishum asufi, the Gemara says, and Rashi explains, because the chutz le'ir avdelei v'shlichei bo mazikim, because this is outside of the city, this ditch, and the mazikim, the shedim, were frequent over there, and therefore they were essentially saying, let this baby get killed, rachmona litzlan. If they place the baby in charifta dinara, Rashi says, nasnur bareba, they put the baby in a table, like baby boy Moshe, vishli chesu, and soyez hanar, and they let the baby go out into the middle of the river, makom shasvinos, ovros tamid, where the boats travel in the middle of the river, so there's a lot of traffic over there, so then they were obviously placing the baby that far out into the river in the hopes that the sailors on the boats, the people that are going by on the fishing boats or whatever type of boats, would go and find the baby, and therefore, they wanted this baby to be found. So therefore, Mastam, it was a kosher baby, and they just couldn't afford to take care of it. The lekach tarcha lo licho ad charifos anar, because they troubled themselves to go get that teva out into the middle of the river. She yavru svino shom v'yimtzu, and there will be in a place where the boats come regularly, and this baby will be found, and therefore, ein bo mishum asufi, the Gemara says. However, pishrei, if they put it in the psharm, in the calm waters, right? Psharm is lukewarm temperature. So if they put it in the pishrei, Rashi says, Pishra, Mokom Shipuanar, Ayide Hafshara Shlagim. This is in a place where the water had gone up there because of the melting of the snow. So there is a little bit of water on the side where there normally isn't water. She'ain Darosinos Lavasham. It's not very deep and the boats don't go over there. So Yeshbo Mishom Asufi. Then you have to be concerned that they, in fact, were trying to arrange that this child would drown or Nebuch be killed or taken by animals that are close to the shore. And therefore, the Gemara says, Yeshbo Mishom Asufi. Likewise, if you put the baby on Sidei Rishus HaRabim, the parents place the child on the side of the road, not in the middle of the road, but on the side of the road where there's a lot of traffic and people are walking over there, not the cars or donkeys or wagons going over there, but on the side of the road where people walk and they would see this baby and pick it up. So then, ain't bo mishum asufi. Obviously, the parents wanted this child to be found and saved. So therefore, it's not an illegitimate child, mistama. However, it was just around, they put it in the middle of the highway, the middle of the road where the traffic is coming and they, you know, they're going fast on their horses and they'll step on the baby, rachmana litzlan, yesh bo mishum asufi. Then you have to be concerned. So all of these are basically scenarios where you have, if you can demonstrate that the parents loved this child, took care of this child, made sure this child was protected before it was found, so then mistama, the child's not an illegitimate child and can be married, is considered a yichasdika child and doesn't have the psulim of asufi. But if the scenarios demonstrate that the parents were hoping that somehow a natural event would occur that this child would be killed, so in that situation you have to be concerned about the illegitimacy of the child and the child is considered an asufi. Mark continues with another statement of Rava. Amar Rava, u'bishnei riavo. In years of famine, Nebuch, when things are very difficult from a financial point of view, ein bo mishum asufi. In that situation, there is no din of asufi at all. Now, what does he mean? There is no din of asufi at all. Oh, the Rava, ahai. What is Rava's statement actually going on? Because if you're going to tell me, ilemo arshus harabim, that this includes even placing the child in the middle of the arshus harabim, so what's going on over here? I did the shnei riavo. Just because it is a year of famine, it's a time of famine, so call the late. Why would that, so to say, make the parents put the child in the middle of the highway? In the middle of the highway, you're going to have lots of problems, and that this child is going to be run over by a horse or a donkey or a wagon or a car. So therefore, the fact that it's Shnei Riavon, how does that impact on, they put the child in a very dangerous situation. So that can't be what it's talking about. Elo Atzidei Rishus HaRabim, telling me that they put the child on the side of the Rishus HaRabim. What, it's only in a time of famine that that's safe? No. My ir yo Shnei Riavon, that has nothing to do with whether it's a Shnei Riavon, a year of famine or not. Even if you put it on afilu below Shnei Riavon, even if you put the child there not in a year of famine, the parents obviously want the child to be saved. And therefore, this child is not an asufi. So what is Rava's statement saying that shas reyavo, there is no din of asufi? So the word says, elo ki itmar de Rava aha. If Rava, in fact, made such a statement, it goes on the following statement. What is that? The Amar of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said, Amar Rabbi Abba, name of Rabbi Abba. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Bar Zavdi, said the name of Yehuda. Bar Zavdi, said the name of Rav. Amar Rav. The statement is, Kozman Shebishuk, Aviv Imo Nemanim Olav. When the child is still in the shuk, he's still in the street, and then two parents come along, the father and mother come along and say, that's our baby. So then we believe them that that is their baby and the child has whatever lineage the parents have. The parents must have a legitimate marriage. So then we believe them while the child is still in the street, hasn't been taken into the orphanage yet. However, Nasaf bin Ashuk, but if the child is in fact taken into the orphanage, so now the child is no longer out on the street, so then we don't believe a couple to come along that says, yeah, that's our baby, if they don't have independent proof, if they can't verify it in some way. And Nemanim Allah. What's the rationale behind this? It's my time, and it's on this that Rava made his statement. Over Rava, hol the yotzo lo shem asufi, because once a child is brought in off the street and now is in the orphanage, and therefore he has a chazaka now that he is an asufi, so then you need two valid edim to remove him from that chazaka. So if he's still in the street, he doesn't have a chazaka yet, he's an asufi, so then the parents are believed. But once he's brought in from the shuk, so then you need two valid edim to go and testify to change his status because his chazaka is now that he's an asufi. But rather than add, if you are my Rava, but in a year of famine, here, there is such overwhelming evidence that there is such poverty going on because it's a time of famine. So then, even after he's brought in, even if he's Nasaf, Rava tells us that the parents are believed in this situation. Amr Chisah tells us the following din, Shlosho Nemanim Li'alter. There are three people that are believed only immediately, right at the time of the scenario occurring. So then in those three situations are they believed. But after that, they're not believed. What are the three situations where people are believed immediately, but they're not believed at a later point in time? Eluhain. One is our Asufi case, which is what we'll say in a moment, Yehud Amaran. Next case is a Chaya, a woman who is a midwife, and she wants to testify about the lineage of the child. O poteris chavrusel, and likewise a woman who women are together, and one of them has a blood discharge and would be anida. So we believe this woman to say she was the one that had the need to discharge, and we don't make all the other women anida. Gemara now goes through all of these three cases, which I just went through very quickly. So what is the case of the asufi that's believed nemon li alter? So that's what we just said, hod damarit, that if they nesaf bin ashuk, we no longer believe them. It's too late. But if it's right now, while the kozman should be shuk, the asufi is still out there on the steps of the orphanage, so and we believe the parents to say we are the parents. What's the case of the Chaya, the woman who is a midwife, the OBGYN? So the Tanya, Chaya, Nemenis, Lomar, Zey Yotze Rishon, Zey Yotze Sheni. So let's say they're twins. So the midwife is believed to say that Chetzron is the firstborn and not Perach, or vice versa. She's believed in this situation to say which one of them is the Bechor, which one of them is not the Bechor. But under what circumstances is she believed? When she didn't leave the room, she didn't leave the birthing room. She left the birthing room, she's no longer believed. She's lost her cheskas that I'm 100% certain this one is the Bechor, because when she left, maybe they got switched around, that both the babies look alike. And how can she be so certain that this one is a Bechor and that one's not the Bechor? So therefore, when she's in the room, the Tanakhama tells us over here, so as long as she didn't leave the room, we believe her. But if she leaves the room, then we no longer can believe her, not because she's not trustworthy, because we're not certain that what she's saying is correct. Rabbi Elazar disagrees with the Tanakhama. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Hursuka al Omda Nemenis. If she stays in her same position, so then we believe her. Vim Lab, but as we'll see, it means if she turned away and she's not watching the babies constantly, so then she loses her ability to state for certain that this is the Bechor, this is not the Bechor. V'imlav, eino nemenis. She wouldn't be believed in that situation. Shmuel says, what is the practical difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer? Might be Nayu. Shmuel says, the difference is, the practical nafkamina is, Ika be Nayu, the Ahadir Apa. According to the Tanakhama, if all she did was turn away from the babies, but she's still in the same room, she'll remember, yeah, the one on my right, that was the Bechor, the one on my left, that's not the second one. So even though she's not looking at them, but she's still in the room, so she knows it didn't get switched around. So the Tanakhama believes her. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says that if she's not looking at them all the time until they put a red bindle on the Bechor, until they make some sort of a siman on the Bechor, so they can testify that that's the Bechor. So Rabbi Eliezer says if she's not literally watching them, if she turns her head away, so then she loses this ability to describe which one is in fact the Bechor and which one is not. So that's the second of the three cases where Nemonim Li'alter, again, a slight difference between what La'alter means, according to Tanakhama versus Rabbi Eliezer, and wouldn't be believed at a later point in time. What's the third case? That was the case of Poteres Chavrosel. And one woman is believed to say that she's the one that has the Nida status and not the other women. Mahi, what's that? So if not, this is a Mishnah that we have in Nida, where the Mishnah tells us, let's say three women, Shalosh Noshim, Shayushenes Mita Achas. There are three women that were lying on some sort of a bed or a couch, and the Nimsa Dam Tachas Ahasmi, and we find blood underneath one of them. I don't know where that blood came from. However, therefore, the default position is kulam tmeis. We have to presume the worst case scenario that possibly all three of them are nidos, but we certainly don't know which one is a nido. One of them is definitely a nido, and therefore all three of them are treated as if they are nidos and have all the stringencies that now are being a nido in terms of they have to go be tar, they're not permitted to their husbands, etc., etc. So, bad ko achas mi avinim says tmeya. But if one of them checked herself out and she was found to, in fact, be tamei nida, so then she is tmeya, he tmeya. However, the other two women, v'chulam tahoros, they are permitted in this situation to be considered still like their previous status of not being a nida, and they are tahoros for all the ramifications of that. And Rav Chisda qualified this, and Amar Rav Chisda, this Mishnah nida is only Shabbat ko atzma kishir veses. It's only she had checked herself immediately. Rashi explains that this shir veses means li'achar metzias, as soon as she finds the blood, miyad, she goes and immediately goes and checks herself out. And this shir veses, Rashi says, is from the Gemara Nidan Daf Yudalid, she'omed her aid, hu akinuach, that she takes the cloth that she wipes herself with, it's right next to the bed, b'tzad ha'mashko, ve'eno mechusar ela l'kaneach miyad, and she goes, and as soon as they saw the blood, she immediately went and checked herself, and therefore she's believed in that situation, when she's found to be tmeya, that she is the one that is the source of the blood, and the other two women are not. So this is only, again, neman li'alter, but beyond this shir veses, beyond this immediate period of time, there no longer is a believability to the woman in this situation. Not that we don't trust her, but it's possible that the other women had the nida, and she also is a nida, and therefore we only believe that she is the sole source of this blood if she checks herself right away. Mark continues with another din. Tana Rabban, we learn the following braisa. Nemenes Chaya, the midwife, the OBGYN, is believed to say, Lomar, Zeh Kohen, Zeh Levi. Let's say there were a bunch of women that were giving birth in the same ward, in the same place. Nebuch, so many times during our persecutions, so the women had to be put into a single room, and it may have been dark there, and they all gave birth at the same time. So the midwife, the OBGYN, is believed to say over here, the Chaya is believed to say that this one is the Bas Kohen, or the Ben Kohen, Zeh Levi. This is the child from the Levi. Or Zeh Nosin, this is the child, the Nosin over there was there. Zeh Mamza, this is the child of the Mamza over there. Let's say there was four women there. One was a Kohen, one was a Levi, one was a Nosin, one was a Mamzer. So they're believed over here to say, the midwife is believed to say, this child came from this woman, the Kohen, this child came from that woman, the Levi, this one from the Nosin, this came from the Mamzer. But again, when? By Medvar Mamurim, Shalom Koro Aleha Shame Ara, where nobody is contradicting her. So she is believed because there is no witnesses coming to contradict her. However, Avo Koro Aleha Ara, somebody's coming along and saying, hey, I was there also. And that's not the case. So then, end in the minutes, then she loses her ability because she's not Shtei Eidim. So therefore, there is no Chazak over here that this is the Kohen, this is the Levi, this is the Nosin, this is the Mamzer. The child doesn't have a Chazakah that this woman established him as. Therefore, if there's an argument about this, so then this is an unknown case, and it's going to be Nebuchadnezzar. Now, who is arguing over here? Aror Demai. If you're going to tell me, Ilemo, Aror Chad, that one person comes and says to the midwife, no, you're wrong, so Vama Rebbe Yochanan, ain't Aror Pachas Bishtayim. So once she declares this child to be the Kohen Levi, the Nosin, or the Mamzer, so then you need two kosher witnesses to go and contradict her. So it can't be that we're talking about Aror Chad, because in that situation, Rabbi Yochanan says, "Ein ara pochas mishnayim, el ara trei." So it must be the two witnesses come along and contradict her. So that's the ara that we're talking about over here. Alternatively, Vibay Sema, the second teretz is le'olam em l'cho ara chad. We are talking about here that only one person contradicts her. However, the chiyom Rabbi Yochanan, "Ein ara pochas mishnayim," when Rabbi Yochanan said that the only way you have an ara, somebody contradicting her, is if there are two people contradicting her, that's only hanimili hecha de isa chazaka de kashrus. That's only where you require two eidim, is when she established this child as the Kohen, the Levi, the Nosin, or the Mamzer, and nobody argued with her at that point in time. So now there's a chazaka that's what the status of this child is, and you need two kosher witnesses to go and change that chazaka around. I will hecha de leka chazaka, but where there's no chazaka, they're right at the very beginning, they're coming and arguing with her, so then the leka chazaka de kashrus, so then so then she says, this is the Kohen. And the other guy says, no, this is the Nosin, or this is the Levi. So then there's no reason to believe her more than them. And therefore, even one person challenging her would be believed. The Brisa continues and says, the Neman Baal Mekach, the person who owned the original item that's being sold, the owner of that item that is now being sold, he is believed, Lomar, Lezeh Mocharti, Lezeh Ein Mocharti. He's believed to say, I sold this item to Reuven. So therefore, Reuven now is the owner of it, and not to Shimon, even though Shimon's claiming that he bought it. So the original owner is believed to say, I sold the Teruvin and not the Shimon. But under what circumstances is this true? Similar to what we just said. But under what circumstances do we believe the original owner to say, I sold the Teruvin and not the Shimon, when he still has it in his possession? So Reuven and Shimon are saying, hey, I bought it from you. So the original owner of the Mekach is believed, if he still has it in his possession, to say, I gave it to Reuven, I sold it to Reuven, and not to Shimon. Why is that? So Rashi explains, because he is responsible to make sure that his deal goes through. They had agreed to a deal, and he doesn't want to be over Amisha Para. Rashi explains that if a person goes back on his word, even though technically there was no kinyan yet, he hadn't transferred over the item, so technically he could go back on his word, but there is something called Amisha Para. It says that somebody that goes back on his word, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu that paid back the Dor HaMabul, this week's Parsha, and the Dor HaFlaga, so that same HaKadosh Baruch Hu will go and pay back this person for doing something that's wrong. You don't go back on your word. You said something, you go and follow through. So this person, the owner of this original item, so he is still having it in his possession. So he's going to make sure that he gives it to the right person. He's conscious of who really bought this from him, because he doesn't want to be over Misha Para. If he says, oh no, I think I'll give it to Shimon, I like Shimon better. No, then he's over Misha Para. And therefore, he'll be certain to say that, yeah, I sold it to Reuven and not to Shimon. So, Bizman Shemecho Biyado, if the Mekach is in his hands, so then we believe the original owner. However, Avol Ein Mecho Biyado, they're already fighting about it. Both Reuven and Shimon are holding on to it, and each one saying, I bought it. So then we don't believe the original owner, because Mistame, he's no longer so aware. He doesn't have the Misha Para aspect hanging over his head. So therefore, maybe he's making a mistake. He's not sure who he sold it to. Then he's not believed. And we turn to Ayin Dalud Mud Aleph. Or it's an obvious question. Well, who'd you get money from? Did you get the $10 from Reuven, or did you get the $10 from Shimon? So he says he got it from both of them. We're talking here about a case. We got money from both of them. So Omar, he said, one of them gave it to me. One of them gave me the money, and one of them forced it on me. I'd already sold it, and the other one forced it upon me. But now I don't remember. They both were very interested in buying the item from me, and I sold it to one of them, but I don't remember now which one I sold it to. In that situation, so he's believed if he still has the item in his possession. No, I'm certain I sold it to Reuven and not Shimon. But once it's already out of his possession and they're both holding on to it, claiming each of them that it belongs to them, so then we no longer believe the original owner. Likewise, the Brisa says, Neman dayin lomar lozeh zikisiv lozeh chayavti. A judge is believed to say that I paskin that Reuven is in fact the owner of the item and Shimon is not, or that Reuven is owed money by Shimon and Shimon has to go pay him the money. Now, under what circumstances is a judge believed? When the litigants are still there in the court with him. So he's believed to say, this is how I paskin. However, if everybody left the court, and now a week later, they come to him and say, how did you paskin? So then, without any documentation, he's not believed at that point to say that I paskin that Reuven is owed the money by Shimon, and not the other way around. More says, well, just see it. Well, there should be a document that was produced from the court, so go and see what the document says. So the Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, no, we're talking here about a case, the Kriya Zichusayu. The document somehow got lost, it got ripped up, and therefore it's not around for us to go check it out. No, the Nedar V'Nidanai, Ninhu. So go and adjudicate the case again. Go and have them present all their evidence, and Mistama, you'll come up to the same conclusion that you did the previous week. If the judgment was clear that Reuven was the righteous person, he was the one that was owed the money, and Shimon was the one that really owes him the money, so then rejudge the case, and you come up to the same answer. So the Gemara says, no, they can't do that because it wasn't clear. And we have Bishuda the Daini. Rashi tells the Machlokas throughout Shas what Shuda the Daini means. Rashi means that the person has to go and figure out, to the best of his ability, what the case went, and he therefore paskin in this situation. Rashi says, "Bidin she'eno toli b'tam." It doesn't have a definitive answer that yes, Reuven is the right one and Shimon is the wrong one. El akol b'fiv shel dayin. It's up to the determination of the judge. Like the Gemara Ketubas tells us, "The yomar nichsei l'tuvia." If a man says that his property should go to tuvia, the also shnei tuvia, and two tuvias come along, and shneim krovim, they're both relatives, or shneim shchein, they're both relatives. So we say in that situation, the judge has to figure out, in his best interpretation, which tuvia he thinks it was supposed to be given to. Who does he think? The judge has to estimate. Who does he think was closer to tuvia, which tuvia the original person was closer to? And that's called shuda de daini. Tosa is a different understanding. Tosa says, no, the judge does whatever he wants. Shuda de daini means the judge can do whatever he wants. And therefore, since this is a case of shuda de daini, whether like Rashi, whether like Tosos, so therefore, there's no guarantee that when they re-adjudicate the case, now they'll come up with the same answer. And therefore, since we do have a psak over here, so then the judge is believed to say what his answer was only right then and there, but at a later point in time, and no Naaman, he's not believed. And this is, again, in accord with the idea that certain people are believed la'alter, but they're not believed, they don't have a halachic Naamanus at a later point in time. Again, this is a good breakpoint. We again learn for the safety of all of the tzal and kochos habitocho, and all the holy people that are defending Klai Yisrael, for the pidyon shvuyim, that they should be returned safe and healthy, b'mehera, and that all those who need a refuah shleima should have a refuah shleima, and refuah sanefesh, a refuah saguf, and all of Klai Yisrael should be safe.